Hello, I'm the Paisleyprint author, and today I'm going to be teaching you about space and place again, because I had a lot of ideas for the last one. Building place. I like to imagine that I am the character. So when I'm writing a thing, I think, what is at eye level? So I have to zoom in and zoom out. If a character is having an intense personal moment, it might be right to describe things in their immediate area with some detail, perhaps things at their eye level. So if they're sat down, they may have noticed something on a table. Otherwise, it's just in their peripheral vision. So I'd think, it may be right to describe things in their immediate area with some detail. So has your character got one of those cardboard rings around her coffee cup? Is the scenery outside the window far enough for it to pass slowly, or is it a blur of trees and bushes? Is there hopefulness in what your character is seeing? Is there anything, any evidence that she isn't alone in the universe? This particular passage being taken from the idea of if a character is on a train, not just, you shouldn't write what they see, you should write what they focus on. I think that's a very important distinction. It's a subtle distinction, but I think it's a very important one that a lot of people don't touch upon, is when you want to describe something, you need to describe stuff that's important. And by important, I don't just mean in the context of foreshadowing, as I've said before, to just be stuff that's just important. So important to the character, might be important to character development. Sure, it could come back later on. To be honest, you don't have to foreshadow things which are massively important all the time. You could, for example, describe somebody's room in detail the first time they have a friend around. And then in the future, you could bring up little reminders of those details, such as a mahogany campaign desk with a drawer missing and a secret compartment in the bottom left. And you could bring up the missing drawer in a later story. That's something that I've done with Who Built the Humans, and I think that makes the world feel a lot more realistic, because it's almost having, you're in conversation with your reader. So you tell them the story at the start and you say, this is what the room looks like. Then in the future you will say, hey, do you remember that room I told you about? So there's something happening with the drawer at the moment. I think that's important. So it's important to have that distinction in your mind between writing what the character sees and writing what the character is focusing on. So if your character is called Mary and she's in a car, she might not give a shit about the road signs. I've read plenty of stories where it's like, oh, Mary was going down the M60 and she knew that if she turned right, she could go to Chester Zoo or a service station where she once paid for overpriced coffee that gave her the shits. Like, I don't care. I just don't care. Nobody cares. Absolutely nobody cares. I'm not even sure the writers of stories like that care. It can be done for satire. Obviously, if things are bad on purpose, it's hilarious. Such as my love life. But yeah, it can be done on purpose for positive effect. Only in certain situations. If you're writing like a serious story, I don't want to get into preach territory here, but if you're writing a serious story and your character is stressed out and bad stuff's happening to them, they'll be focusing on their immediate surroundings or on whatever is threatening them. They will be doing fight or flight. That's just how humans work. So they may be hyperfixating on danger, or they may be hyperfixating on some delicious noodles they've bought from a train station whilst they're hiding from, I don't know, the French police because they beat someone to death with a baguette. Is that xenophobic? Oh, it's the French, who cares? It's fine, they're also Europeans. I'm allowed. I'm not a European anymore though, am I? This isn't a politics podcast, so I'm going to get back into writing. I'm terribly sorry. So yeah. So Stephanie's on a train. Is she on her own in the carriage? Is there somebody else in the carriage? Is there somebody else in the carriage with headphones on? Can she hear the music in those headphones? Does that therefore mean that she knows that person can't hear her? You know, you've got all of these things in her realm of perception that you need to consider. And it makes writing stories sound fucking complicated. That's probably because it is, and it should be. Maybe I'm not normal in that sense, but when I write stories, I like to invent a puzzle for myself to unpick. Otherwise, I get bored and I don't finish the stories. So, for like Who Built the Humans, there was a time-traveling cabinet drawer, which is only written about in subtext, and that kept me going. So let's say your character is on a train, you see the seat next to them. Is there a wine stain? There's a wine stain on the table. Shows that other people were here celebrating. What does this do to your character and the story? If she was in another mood, she might not notice the wine stain. She may instead be drawn to an empty poster frame or the chunky headphones poking over the horizon of the seat opposite. She may feel isolated. She may want to know what the ginger person across the carriage is privately listening to. Or maybe it isn't private. Maybe their headphones are a bit too loud, so the rattling of some pop star is echoing out for all to hear. Is your character amused or pissed off at this fact? Place is everything. Place is character. So to describe the world means to describe it in a way that relates to your character. So if your character is going on a journey, do you describe what's outside the window or what's inside the vehicle? And why do you do that? And what does it mean? That's the kind of thing you need to really be considering all the time. I'd recommend becoming obsessed with it. It works for me. So in my earliest novel, let's call it Novel 2008, because the title was not good, I developed the first semblance of what I will now call a writing philosophy. I know that I wanted the planet to be its own character. I told myself that. I think I told my parents as well, and I think they didn't care. So the planet's weather patterns would one day be explicit signals. This idea was later dropped, but the concept of a thinking planet remained entombed in my head for some time. It was a strong idea, a metaphor turned upside down. I'm reminded of a writer's short story about feathery women. I'm not going to say the writer's name because I've probably forgot it. There's a little asterisk here that says, I did no research to back up this memory. Might not be by someone called Claire, but I don't care enough to check. That's the kind of quality you can expect from this. To be honest, I'm also doing it because I'm wary of making comparisons to other writers that may irk those other writers, especially if they're in social circles which have more clout than mine. I don't want to get cancelled again. I'm reminded of a story about feathery women in which one young woman is described as pecking at a packet of crisps. I remember the story was about women changing as they got older. My tutor at the time read this story out to our class in 2015 and I guessed out loud that, quote, she turns into a fucking bird, unquote. You know, I was correct. I recall my tutor being surprised that I'd guessed it this early on in the story, and he asked if I'd read it before. I had not, but the title, Feathery Women, and then pecking really made it obvious to me. This stands out to me. Not because it was a bad story from my point of view, but because the apparent twist in the ending was so blatantly obvious that it made me switch off mentally as I was listening to the story. I just could not bring myself to pretend I was interested anymore, because I knew how it would end. Sort of like waiting for a dentist appointment. You know what's going to happen. You don't like the wait. Another story this happened with was in the Great British Short Story Collection a few years ago. Again, I've thrown that book away, so I don't remember the title or the author. It was about a young couple getting a taxi. The taxi driver ran over a, quote, kid and put it in the back of the taxi. The couple didn't see this. The couple thinks it's a goat because he said kid, because baby goats are called kids. But it isn't. Oh, plot twist. It's a human child. This twist was painfully obvious to me, like a bad joke at a pub quiz. And it's experiences like this which made me realise that as a reader and as a writer, I have little patience for purely formulaic work. So my point is that description needs to not hit your reader over the head. When describing a place or object, do so in a way that does not immediately make it obvious that it will become important later. Space and foreshadowing is about balance. We don't want the whole story being a description of the place but we also don't want the one door that is the right door in the labyrinth to be the only one that is described. Otherwise, as readers, we will know that the answer, we will know the answer long before the protagonist, and this can become infuriating if not used on purpose. It works well in comedy, for example. Let's look at the the 1980s movie Labyrinth with David Bowie and Jennifer Connelly, for example. There are routes in that labyrinth that Sarah didn't take, and it's an elaborately detailed movie. And, you know, there's even a point where a worm says, oh, if she'd have gone that way, she'd have gone straight to the castle. And that's, you know, that's frustrating and it's funny, but it's also world building, and it's also something that the character doesn't hear or know about from the story at all. She never learns that fact. And it's the idea that there's this labyrinth, and the labyrinth's a great metaphor for a story anyway. And, you know, I'll probably use that more and more as my obsession with David Bowie turns into insanity, if it hasn't already. But I'd be looking at the labyrinth and think, this is a short story. The character chooses which way to go. She perceives things, and we perceive things through her eyes and through Jareth's eyes. So, you know, she can go left, she can go right, she can go up, she can go down, she can go forward, she can go backwards, she can perhaps even do all of these at the same time. And all the time, it's a personal journey. The labyrinth is a metaphor. And I think a personal journey is also a metaphor for a labyrinth. So for me, when it comes to space and storytelling and foreshadowing, the most important thing is to make it realistic. And by realistic, I don't mean your story has to look like the famous British it's a soap opera, EastEnders. I find it to be a sitcom because I enjoy it when the characters get injured. It makes me laugh so much, sometimes a bit of a wee comes out. So really, what I want as a reader, and what I think a lot of other people probably want, is for the story to seem realistic in and of itself. So if you have a magic system and you want to include space and foreshadowing, you would likely include somewhere where potions are stored. If wizards, for example, are brewing potions all the time because they live in a magical world where potions are common, where do they store all of their surplus potions? Is there a market for potions? Do potions go out of date? This is the kind of like world building that I think a lot of people need to start considering. And it's the kind of stuff that's really interesting because it makes you feel like the world is alive and it makes you feel like you're a part of the world. And it's about, again, that conversation you're having with the reader. So if I talk to you like a 5-year-old and say, oh my God, today I went to the park and then I did this and then I had a Mars bar and then I went on a walk and then I had an ice cream and then I went for another walk and then I went on the swings, you don't care. But if I say, I went to the swings today, there was clouds overhead, I had a strange, ominous feeling that there was an evil biscuit and the evil biscuit was going to kill me and fly through my skull. Can you tell I'm improvising this? Anyway, what I'm saying is detail does create intrigue, but only to a point. If you then start adding the manufacturing process of the biscuit, the emotional state of the person who was making the biscuit, how his wife left him for somebody who wasn't so obsessed with biscuits that they sellotape them to their bedroom ceiling, that kind of stuff isn't, it stops being interesting at a point. And I think for me, space is balance. Space is a balance between place and character. The space is where stuff happens, but it's also happening in and of itself. So, I've just got a very serious message off eBay on my phone. It says, please buy some more shit. That's fantastic. I've just been put right off whatever I was talking about. But yeah. Space, final frontier. You need to think about why your character is perceiving the things that you're describing, because you can't describe the entirety of the space your character is occupying. So when you pick to describe a tree instead of the pub behind that tree, you've got to think about your character's mental state. Why are you describing the tree? Why is the character focused on that instead of the pub? And I think that's an important distinction that needs to be made. And you need to also be wary of being too efficient with that. You can push it to its logical extreme and only describe things which are relevant to the story, which happened in Feather Women and it happened in the Goat story. There's a lot of things in the modern short story now where writers and tutors and lecturers and online gurus, pyramid schemes, whatever the hell, they're all saying you need to work on the economy of the story. Only fit so many words in an easy and da, 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 da. Cut it back, cut it back, cut it back, cut it back. If you're gonna have, a spade describing somebody's garden, at some point you need to bury something. I get that, I do get that, but at the same time, I think it's bullshit because it becomes too formulaic. To the point, if an undergrad student can look at the first few lines of a short story and the title of a short story and know exactly what the twist at the end of 24 grueling pages is, then your story hasn't achieved any of the things that a short story or any form of art should achieve, which is to say something that whilst it might not be new, at least feels new, to mix things up, to try something out, to make a statement, not a political one, of course, doesn't have to be, to make people think. That's why I'm in the game, to make people think, perhaps laugh along the way. And you're not making people think if they can work out what the plot twist at the end of your story is just by looking at the title and the first two lines of dialogue. That is a formulaic story, and you need to steer well clear of those because people are wising up to it. I've spoke to people who are bored of that kind of thing. They say, all stories are too predictable and formulaic now. I want to be a small part of a movement away from that, back to stories which are organic, feel real, and sometimes can be unpredictable. Not every gun is going to get fired in these stories. That's the kind of thing I like, the suspense, and you can pull the, pull the illusion out from under the reader and say, look, actually, this was happening all along, and there was foreshadowing for that, but you didn't pick it up because it's subtle. That's the kind of foreshadowing I like. That's the kind of space I like where, if a character is on a train and you're reading about it and they're focused on a can of cider that's been crushed and it's between two seats, if they're focusing on that rather than on the city outside, it makes you wonder as a reader. You think, why? What's going on inside this character's head? And you get intrigued and you want to know this person. And bit by bit, you fall in love with this person, and then you realize they're fictional and you spiral into depression. That's what you want to create as a short story writer and as an artist. You want to give someone the biggest and worst and best existential crisis of their life. That's it. I think I've basically just written all of the lectures in one go. I've been the Paisley Print author. Most of that was improvised. You've been whoever you are. Thank you. Buy my book, please. Buy my book. I need to spend some more money on Lego on the internet. Thank you very much. And good night. I'll see you in the next one, which will happen at some point in the future.